willed it to be something different. To change. I thought of my mom again in the kitchen of our trailer, telling me what a disappointment I was. The image blotted itself out, becoming a fiery red light. And then it happened. It was snowing. White, glistening flakes were falling all around me and Knox. He looked at me with an expression that was somewhere between pride and awe. "See?" he said quietly. I stretched my arms out and spun around, laughing. The snow was accumulating. "No one does this right away. Not even me," Knox said quietly. "You have power." I reached out my hand and let some flakes fall into it. It didn't melt. It wasn't snow, I realized. It was ash. I looked up at Knox in surprise. "Your fire burned up the sky," he explained. For a second, I was disappointed. Snow would have been so pure and beautiful. But ash made so much more sense with who I was. "We should get back. Gert's going to want to talk to you," he said suddenly. We walked back inside. I didn't take his hand this time. I'd rather fall down in the dark. Chapter 20. When I got to Gert's cave, she was standing in front of the scrying pool again. "Don't be too mad at Knox. He did what I asked of him." I could feel my anger bubbling up again, but I stayed in one place, and my fingers didn't feel like they were on fire. Yet. I'm not even sure if Knox actually knows how messed up this is. But you do. Why did you do this? Why did you tell Knox all that stuff about me? He has no right to know. I was somehow certain that Gert's moral compass pointed north, but she was ignoring it for the cause. "Because we're running out of time," she said simply, gazing calmly into my eyes. Every line in her round face was fixed in its sincerity and certainty. "So that justifies everything? You get to just root around in my head and mess with me because it's convenient for you?" Gert shook her head. "I'm sorry, Amy. It's funny. We actually need your sense of good around here. Things have gotten murky after so many years fighting her. We need someone to remind us that not everything is complicated." She was apologetic for the hurt she'd caused me, but not the action. Did that mean she would do it all over again if she had the chance? If it meant I would agree to take down Dorothy? I couldn't think of any other way. "Magic can be triggered by our strongest emotions," Gert said, turning away from me. "It worked, didn't it?" Gert focused on her scrying pond. It was smaller than the one in the war room. Although I was still bristling with frustration over her witchy doublespeak, I moved closer to see what she was doing. Ripples began moving inward toward Gert's finger as she mumbled words under her breath. A face began to appear in the water. I narrowed my eyes. A familiar face. "Mom," I spat. There she was, looking completely the opposite of the angry, pill-popping mess who had stormed away from our trailer. Before the tornado, before Oz, it all felt like so long ago. She had a small band-aid on her forehead. Her hair was pulled back in a ponytail, and she was wearing jeans and a pullover sweater I'd never seen before. She looked nice. She looked clean. But she looked sad, too. "Is it a trick?" I demanded without looking up. Maybe there was a part of me that couldn't believe she had changed so much. Maybe there was a part of me that didn't want to believe she had changed so much without me there to help her. It's not a trick, Amy. I thought there was no way to see the other place. She waved a hand dismissively. There are more things that can be done than people think. I can't let the witches in on all of my secrets, now can I? I reached out to my mother, feeling hopeful and scared at the same time. The water rippled through my fingers, but I couldn't touch her. The unfamiliar room she was standing in was small and gray, and the furniture was that foam and wood kind that I'd seen in doctor's offices. Where was she? Was she in a shelter? One of those places they put people who have been displaced by disaster? She was looking under the cushions of the couch. Then she moved on to a tiny kitchen area and began rifling through the cabinets. My gut twisted. I knew what she was doing. She was looking for her stash. I don't need to see any more, I said. I'd seen this horror show before. But I couldn't pull my eyes away. Her face lit up like she'd found what she was looking for. She pulled it out and held it at arm's length. It was a sweater. My red one. It was a little too tight and had a tiny hole in the sleeve, but it was my favorite because it was the only thing I owned that was actually designer. It was dirty, covered in what looked like the red clay roads for which Dusty Acres was named. It had probably been tossed from the trailer during the cyclone. She hugged it to her chest. She wasn't using. She was just missing me. I balled my fists in anger. I had spent years trying to clean her up, and the thing that finally made it happen was getting rid of me. You can access magic from the good places, as well as the bad, you know, Gert said softly. I laughed. Maybe you haven't looked around in my head enough. There are no good places. You can decide what kind of magic you practice, just like you can decide who you are. In the end, it's really the same thing. But you don't have to be angry.
What if I want to be angry? I snapped. Don't I have a right to be angry?
Gert just shrugged evenly, but I kept going.
Look at what I did back there when I was angry. I set the sky on fire and made it snow ash. Being angry works. It works a lot better than anything else I've tried.
But imagine if you didn't have to start there. Imagine if you got to start somewhere good.
Yeah, well, I said, I can imagine a lot of things. That doesn't mean they're possible.
Anything is possible, dear. Look around you.
I laughed bitterly. Oz, where all your worst nightmares can come true.
Look at us, Gert said, ignoring me. We witches spent our lives fighting each other. Now we live under the same roof, working together for something greater. It just goes to show.
I tried to imagine becoming besties with Madison Pendleton after years of her torturing me. I shook my head. But Gert wasn't talking about Madison Pendleton. Not really. She was talking about my mother. I felt like if I forgave her, I was just asking her to hurt me again.
Why are you pushing this? I asked. My mom's a million miles away.
It doesn't matter.
She's the voice in your head.
And you want yours to be in there instead?
I want yours to be, Amy.
I refused to look at her. Refused to be taken in by those warm, grandmotherly eyes. I knew what was behind them. I kept staring at the water, but when Gert didn't respond, I looked up to see her fading into white smoke. Well, clearly she was done with this conversation. I looked back down. The image of my mom was fading away. As it did, the water began to bubble. steam began to rise from the roiling, angry water. The pool was boiling, and I knew it wasn't part of Gert's spell. I was the one doing it. Forgiveness can get you places, I guess. But sometimes, you need to light a fire. I sank into my bed that night without bothering to change out of my gown. I'd seen Mom. I'd done magic. It bugged me that even now, my mom was tied to everything I did. Was she seriously still screwing with me from a gazillion miles away? I couldn't blink away the image of her in the scrying pond, all cleaned up and holding on to my sweater. It made me sad. It made me miss her. But it didn't magically erase the years of other, grimmer images. Sleep felt as far away as home. The next morning, I was almost glad to remember that I had a session with Nox. I needed to punch something. That I would get to punch Nox was an added bonus. On my way to the training room, Gert's and Glamora's voices wafted out at me as I passed Glamora's chambers. Something about their tone, hushed, yet sharp and full of warning, like they were talking about something secret, made me stop just outside to listen in.
"Don't encourage it, Glamora."
"Whatever do you mean?"
"You know exactly what I mean. That girl has more cracks in her than the road of yellow brick. Nox will break her in two."
"Or she'll break him.
Don't pretend you were never young.
She has no real connection to any of us. But she and Nox, there's something there."
"We are bound. She is warming to me."
"That's not enough. You know that I have my own suspicions about exactly who it was that brought Amy to Oz. There are few people with enough power to summon someone from the other place, and if my hunch is correct, we both know that a simple binding won't be enough to hold the girl to us. But I can think of a stronger glue."
"She's starved for it, certainly. But I don't know if our boy is capable of love. He wasn't built for it. We didn't build him for it."
"It's funny, Gert," Glamora said. "All that mind-reading, and you still can't see inside the heart. Our boy is starved for it, too. He just doesn't know it yet."
I backed away, shaking my head, and rushed down the hall. I did not feel that way about Nox. Maybe he wasn't the total jerk I'd thought he was at first, but that didn't mean anything. It definitely didn't mean he felt anything for me.
Chapter 21. My pulse was still speeding when I got to the training cave. Seeing him was already going to be different after last night, dancing together, hearing his story for the first time, and feeling the magic that had finally surged through me. When I walked into the cave, he wasn't alone. A glint of tin caught the light and blinded me for a second. It was the girls who had interrupted our dinner the other night, covered in blood. They looked fine now. Better than fine. Annabelle, the tall one with the unicorn scar, was stretching, while Melindra, the half-tin girl, leaned against the wall with her arms crossed, staring at me. Something about the way Melindra flipped open her metal lashes reminded me of Madison back home, like she already hated me and we hadn't even met yet. "Melindra and Annabelle will be joining us today," Nox explained to me without looking up. "Melindra, Annabelle," Nox said. "This is Amy."
"We know who she is," Melindra said. "The girl who fell out of the sky in a tin can to save us all." There was something sarcastic in her voice, but there was something else, too, like she couldn't decide whether she was supposed to be suspicious of me, or if she was hoping everything they said about me was true.
"Nox told me that you escaped the Scarecrow's labs," I blurted.
I'd been spending too much time with Glamora. One of her helpful hints about meeting new people was to tell them something you know about them. But for some reason, I don't think she meant bringing up that horrific time the person was tortured by a mad scientist Scarecrow. But Melindra suppressed a smile, and I could see that it wasn't such a mistake at all. She was proud. Proud of who she was, and of what she had been through.
"They wanted to make me join the Tin Man's secret police," Melindra said.
"I wasn't going to let that happen. So I got out of there and came here. No one's ever done that before." I was impressed. I'd needed Mombi's help to escape, but this girl had done it on her own. I wanted to ask her how, but now didn't seem like the best time.
"We need to see if Melindra and Annabelle are ready to go back out there," Nox said.
"We're ready,"
Annabelle volunteered, without looking to Melindra to back her up. I couldn't believe it. They'd been torn apart by the lion, but there was still no question of not going back.
"Okay, then. Show us what you've got."
"Amy can spar with the winner," Nox said. He still hadn't looked at me, and now he turned around to busy himself with the equipment.
"Don't even,"
Annabelle warned, watching my gaze follow Nox.
"Don't what?" I asked.
The girls both giggled. It was weird to see the flesh and blood side of Melindra's face contort in laughter, while the metal side stayed stiff and emotionless.
"What?"
I asked again.
"We've seen that look before," Annabelle said. "Trust me, it's not worth it. Nox only cares about the cause. There's no room inside him for anything else. Not that plenty of people haven't tried,"
she shot Melindra a knowing glance.
"I'm not," I started, but I could feel myself blushing. "I don't—"
I stopped myself. Nox returned, handing a knife to Annabelle, who thanked him with a flirty smirk. Nox ignored it. Or maybe he just didn't notice it in the first place. Melindra shook her head at the knife and instead offered up a clenched fist. As she lifted it to her chest, a thin, glittering blade folded out from the top of her wrist as easily as a bird would stretch its wings. She looked out at me from behind it with a smirk. Great, I thought. Melindra was a human Swiss Army knife, like Sword Arm back in the palace. At least this one was on my side. She was on my side, right? I leaned against the wall and watched the girls spar. I felt myself shrinking, in danger of disappearing again. I didn't want to have to fight either of them. They'd both been at this way longer than I had. Plus, they seemed to hate me. Why, though? And what was Annabelle trying to say about Nox? Was he playing me? Had every moment between us been planned to make me a better fighter? I heard Annabelle scream, and I looked up just in time to see Melindra's blade slashing across her chest, a bright red streak of blood blossoming on her shirt. And then, just like that, she disappeared in defeat. Off to the spring, I guess. Melindra didn't drop her fighting stance. Nox looked over at me.
Your turn, Amy. Keep your elbows up. You've been dropping them. And Mel, you're half a step behind where you usually are. Focus.
A few seconds later, it was me standing opposite Melindra, a knife from Nox in my hand. Although I had trained plenty of times with him before now, I was nervous to be facing someone new. I didn't have time to be nervous. The fight had begun. Melindra was so light and fast on her tin feet that sometimes her metal and flesh seemed to blur together as she danced around me, landing jabs in my sides and chest. It was clear that she was using magic, too. I tried to summon the power I'd found the night before with Nox. I was pretty sure that I wasn't allowed to set my opponent on fire, but other than misdirection, that was basically the only magic I knew how to do. Not that it was working now. I felt my hands go hot a few times, but no flame appeared. I dodged a blow from Melindra, and something made contact with my shin, her metal meeting my bone. I made a desperate errant swing and a miss at her flesh side before her other leg sideswiped mine, taking me down to the ground in an ungraceful heap.
"What do you think, Nox?" Melindra put a hand on her hip triumphantly. "Still too slow? Am I ready now?"
She reached out her hand to help me up. I ignored it and leapt to my feet. We went at it again. This time, Melindra moved even faster than before, slashing and diving and feinting around me as I stumbled forward like my feet were made of cement, struggling just to keep my balance and avoid her blade as it whipped through the air in every direction.
"Look at you," she said, not pausing in her attack.
She swung her leg toward me in a powerful kick, and I barely managed to get out of the way in time.
"All this training and you're fighting like it's your first day. Am I making you nervous, or is it someone else?"
I lunged for her, urging the fire to my hands, but it didn't come. Melindra disappeared just as I was about to grab her, and I whirled and ducked just in time to avoid getting a haircut, or worse, as her sword grazed the top of my head.
"Oh, did I make you mad?" she asked.
She jumped up and seemed to hang in midair for a split second as she pulled her knees to her chest before whipping them out like a jackknife and shifting her momentum, flying straight for me. Her feet collided hard against my breastbone, and before I knew what was happening, I was on my back on the stone floor again, the wind knocked out of me. I watched with dazed double vision as she turned a graceful backflip and landed like it was nothing. Melindra whipped out her arm and pushed the tip of her blade into my throat, looking down on me with contempt.
"Poor little Amy," she said. "All of Oz is depending on you, and you can't even take out a sorry half-girl like me."
She was pressing hard enough to hurt without actually breaking the skin, but the message was clear. "I could kill you if I wanted to, but for now I'll be nice."
"Shut up!"
I wheezed through clenched teeth, still struggling to breathe.
"Not the best way to impress boys," she said, shifting her eyes sneakily toward Nox. "Especially a boy who cares more about the cause than anything else."
"Shut up!" I spat again, feeling my face go red with anger.
"They all think you're so special. I don't know why. You can't even do a simple spell."
"Go ahead. Try." She pressed her blade harder. My face burned. My fingers tingled with heat. Nox finally stepped in.
"Melindra," he said, grabbing her by the arm, "that's enough. Let her go. She's doing her best."
From the disappointed way he was looking back and forth from her to me, I felt like I had let him down twice. First, by letting her beat me, and then by not fighting back once she had me pinned. Melindra rolled her eyes and snorted contemptuously, but she pulled her weapon away.
"Don't give her false hope, Nox," she said. "You know as well as I do that you're too good for her."
She looked back at me.
"Not so talented after all, are you? Just another outlander who thinks she's special. We get used to that around here, you know."
I'd had enough.
Enough of being picked on. Enough of other people telling me what to do. Enough of feeling powerless. Shut up! I screamed, my words reverberating through the stone chamber. The burning feeling that had been building in my body rushed through me at once, and I lit up. I was on fire. The flames came shooting out of my chest in huge, curling tongues that all rolled together into one giant ball of fire that exploded out of me, rocketing straight for Melindra. She stepped aside casually, and the fireball shot right past her, hitting the wall of the cave with a pathetic fizzle. Nox's mouth dropped open in surprise, but Melindra was unfazed. "That's really the best you can do?" she asked with a sneer. I pushed past both of them without a word. When I showed up in Gert's cave, she looked at me. "You burned your pretty hair," she said, sounding completely unsurprised. "Teach me," I said. "I'm ready. I want to learn." "Get some rest," she said. "Meet me in the training room tomorrow. You'll learn." When I walked into the training room the next morning, it was empty, except for a single stalk of corn growing in the center of the room. "You ready for this?" Nox asked, appearing at my side without warning. I glared at him. "What are you doing here?" "Gert asked me to help," he said without looking at me, and, as if she'd been summoned by her own name, Gert materialized out of nowhere. She drew her hand up in front of her and whispered something, and tiny green shoots began to spring up through the stone floor, quickly unfurling themselves into stalks taller than I was, taller than Nox. Soon there were hundreds of them, and the cave seemed to magically expand to make room for an entire cornfield that had grown all around me. I looked up to find that the ceiling had been replaced by a cold and artificial blue sky. When I glanced back at Nox, he was already disappearing into the green. "Find him," Gert commanded. I lurched ahead, ready to chase after him. Gert's invisible hand stopped me. "Not like that. Pay attention. I like to say a few words when I cast a spell. It helps me focus, and it will also help you as you're learning." She wove her hands together and whispered an incantation. "What I seek, I shall find. What I see will be mine." A white orb formed between her hands and rose like a flare, pausing in midair, waiting for someone to follow after it. I took a step forward. Gert gave me a look of consternation. "No," she said. "Make your own." "What if I set the whole place on fire by accident?" She shook her head. She was frustrated with me, I could tell. But in her frustration, in her squinted, lined eyes and pursed lips, I could see something else, too. Something I didn't see very often. She wasn't just doing this because she wanted me to be able to help the Order. She wanted to teach me because she was worried about me. "I'm here," she said. "I'll be helping you. But you can do it on your own. You're almost there already. Just imagine what you want to happen, and then concentrate on that, and only on that. The magic is everywhere. It's waiting for you to take it and make it your own." I closed my eyes, and my brain went right back to yesterday, when Melindra had me pinned to the ground. "No, no, no," Gert said, clucking her tongue. "Not that. Pick a moment not so filled with emotion this time. Try not to let the anger fuel you anymore. It's too unreliable, too uncontrollable. Pick an innocent moment where you aren't setting the world on fire."
I remembered my first training session with Knox, him leaning into me, his hand on my shoulder.
Yes, there you go.
I imagined reaching out for him with my mind, searching for him. Something was happening. I could feel the tingle of energy rippling through me, seeping out through my pores. I pushed at it, shaping it, trying to make it into what I wanted. In my mind's eye, Knox turned from me and began to walk away. He grew smaller and smaller, and then he looked over his shoulder and beckoned for me. I opened my eyes. An orange ball of fiery energy, no bigger than a fist, was spinning in the air in front of me. I had done it! Knox, I thought. Where are you? At that, the flare jittered and shot ahead into the corn. I followed it as it twisted and turned through rows and rows of stalks, not dropping my singular focus on finding him. It only took a few minutes before I found him sitting on the ground, looking bored. His eyes lit up in pleased surprise when he saw me. "You didn't think I could do it, did you?" I asked. He just shrugged like, "Hey, can you blame me?" "Now I have to find you," he said, standing. "Go ahead. Just try and hide from me. But I'm warning you, I could find you anywhere." Over the course of the next week, I learned how to use misdirection to hide from Knox in the cornfield. I learned how to direct my fiery darts at a target instead of setting structures, not to mention myself, on fire. I learned how to concentrate on what I wanted, which meant figuring out what I wanted. It wasn't easy, but Gert and Knox were patient. Every afternoon, I would spar in the training room with Melindra or Annabelle or Knox. I was still so much slower than the rest of them, but I could tell I was getting better. After a few weeks, I was stretching in the training room, about to go up against Melindra, when Mombi materialized in the corner of the room. I hadn't seen her or Glamora in days. "What is she doing here?" I whispered to Knox. "Ignore her," he said under his breath. But it was hard to ignore someone like Mombi. It felt like some kind of test. Was she here to check up on my progress? To see if I was ready yet? I still hadn't beaten Melindra, which didn't bode well. Now that I'd fought her a million times, along with Annabelle and Knox, I realized that Melindra was by far the best of us all. Most of my sparring sessions with her just boiled down to staying out of her way, which I'd gotten good at doing. But she'd also seemed to develop a grudging respect for me. Now, when we fought, she was all business, not bothering to insult me or snipe at me. She always beat me. Then again, she almost always beat Knox and Annabelle, too. When she had me where she wanted me, she'd just shrug, toss her hair, and raise her arm and its built-in blade up in victory. Today, as Melindra and I began, I could feel Mombi's critical eyes tracking me as I moved and dodged Melindra's weapon. I managed to hold my own, ducking every time she swiped at me with her arm. I was proud that I hadn't let her get within striking distance. This fight was lasting longer than most of our previous ones had, and I could tell we were both getting tired. Maybe today would be the day I'd finally beat her. Maybe all I'd needed was an audience. Melindra forced me back toward the corner, near where Mombi and Knox stood. "She's still reacting," I heard the old witch mutter. "Not acting." Her words hit me in the gut almost as hard as Melindra did. "Oof!" I cried as Melindra surprised me, fainting with her blade and then kicking me right in the stomach. Now she reared back, ready to strike again, this time with the sharp metal blade of her tin arm. I did the only thing I could think to do. I disappeared. I found myself outside of the cave, where Nox had taken me the night I made it snow ashes. I took a second to catch my breath again. Mombi's words had affected me more than I'd expected them to. I'd thought I'd made so much progress, learned so much in the past few weeks. But in an instant, she made me feel like all those lessons hadn't even happened. It made me angry that Mombi had shown up for just one fighting session and was passing judgment on me. She didn't care how I was doing, how much I'd changed. All she cared about was whether or not I was ready to fight.
"You are stronger than you think. Stronger than Mombi thinks," I told myself. "You can take Melindra. Gert believes in you. So does Nox."
I repeated these lines a few times like a mantra until I began to believe them. I thought about Gert's training, focusing on something other than anger to feel the magic begin to thrum in my fingers. I concentrated on the room again and materialized just as Melindra was righting herself after having fallen through the air where I should have been standing. Without hesitation, I flipped through the air and pinned Melindra to the ground. Melindra's eyes widened in surprise.
"Ow!" she said. "Not fair!"
"There's no such thing as fair out there," I said. I'd learned as much from Nox. I jumped to my feet.
"Need some help getting up?"
I asked, extending a hand to Melindra. When I stole a glance at Nox, I saw him watching intently. It could have been my imagination, but it looked like he was actually on the verge of a smile. I didn't dare look at Mombi. Melindra took my hand in her metal one, crushing my bones just a little too hard. She leaned in.
"Let me guess," she hissed. "He told you you were special. He took you to a place he never takes anyone else. Sound familiar?"
Something twisted in my gut, but I managed to keep a smile on my face. It was the halls of high school all over again.
"Salvation Amy's jealous. She wishes this were her baby."
I squeezed even harder and narrowed my eyes.
"Never underestimate a girl from Kansas," I said.
Before Melindra could say anything back, Mombi had stepped in front of me. She was looking at me like she was seeing me for the first time.
"You handled yourself well against our best," Mombi declared. "Training is over. The lion is on the move, heading toward the village of Pumperdink, just south of here. We leave at first light."
Chapter 22.
"You were good back there," Nox said.
"Really good." He had caught me in the corridor below the training area as I was heading to my room. It was dim and narrow down there, with a hazy purple light that glowed from somewhere within the rocky walls.
"Thanks," I said.
"Melindra had it coming. She's too used to winning. She let her guard down."
"Yeah," he said, "but you beat her fair and square. You've gotten so much better. It's not just the magic. It's the rest of it. I don't even think you know you're doing it. The way you move, the way you think on your feet, you've gotten so good so fast. You're a natural, you know."
"I wonder what happened," I said. He gave me a funny look.
"What do you mean?"
"I mean, I was never like this before. Back home, where does it come from?"
"Amy," he said, "it comes from you."
I couldn't help thinking back on what Melindra had said after I'd beaten her. She had just been trying to provoke me, but that didn't mean it wasn't true. In some ways, I wondered if she was the only one that I could trust around here.
At least she was for real with me.
Everyone in this place had an ulterior motive. It wasn't even all that ulterior. Everything anyone did, everything they said to me, was all designed to push me in one way or another, was all meant to force me into becoming the person they thought I was, to become the weapon they needed. Knox was no exception. It would be stupid to think he was. And yet, every now and then, it was like he was trying to tell me something that had nothing to do with Dorothy, or with the cause.
"What do you think you would be like?" I asked.
"You know, if it weren't for Dorothy. If you'd had the life you were supposed to." He looked at me in surprise, like it was something he had never even considered.
He paused. "I don't know."
That's the funny thing, isn't it? As much as I hate her, as much as I wish Oz was how it was supposed to be, that we could all just be happy, I would be a totally different person then. I can't even imagine who I would be. Maybe someone better. I don't know. Maybe someone worse. I like who I am.
He rolled his eyes and laughed ruefully to himself.
Maybe I owe her.
"Let's not get carried away here," I said. But I knew what he meant. It was like me and my mom. Yeah, she'd been pretty crappy at the whole parenting game. But what if she hadn't been? Who was to say I wouldn't have turned out like Madison Pendleton?
"My whole life has been about fighting her, you know," Knox was saying now. "Who will I be when she's gone?"
"Do you think it will ever really happen?" He tilted his head, pushing his fingers through his wild mane of hair, looking both vulnerable and certain of something.
"I know it will," he said. "I wasn't sure at first, but now I know."
"How?"
"I don't know who brought you here, or how they did it, but I know there was a reason for it. You're here to help us, and I know you can do it."
Suddenly, I was aware of how close we were standing. So close I could smell his familiar sandalwood scent. I felt a pull toward him, one I didn't just attribute to magic.
"And then what? Then who will we be?"
He leaned in toward me the tiniest bit.
"Then everything changes," he said quietly. "Then I'm different. You'll be different too. You're different already. I knew it from the beginning, but..."
I leaned toward him now too, and, as if I were channeling Gert, anticipated something I really wanted. Wondered if I actually could make it happen, without any magic at all.
Suddenly, his face changed and he looked away. "You have to promise to be careful tomorrow," he said. "I didn't want to bring you, but Mommy wouldn't listen. The lion's no joke. You have to promise me you won't do anything stupid. We need you too much. You're too valuable."
For a second, I thought he'd been saying something different. But now his jaw was set. And I remembered again.
"I know the deal," I said. "I know why I'm important to you."
I was testing him now. I wanted him to correct me. He stared at me for what felt like the longest time. But he didn't say anything else. I turned around.
"Dorothy must die. I get it. But in the meantime, what are you living for?" I asked.
He didn't answer.
"I have to go," he said.
I was already walking away.
"There's planning to do. You should try and get some sleep."
Chapter 23.
A screeching sound woke me in the middle of the night. When I opened my eyes, still groggy, I saw it. A bat. It was zigzagging around my room, wings flapping, howling with a voice that was 10 times bigger than its body. I knew what it meant. It was a signal. It wanted me to follow it. When I got to the war room a few minutes later, everyone else was already there, dressed for battle and clustered around Glamora's scrying pool. Melindra and Annabelle had grim looks on their faces. In other words, some things were the same as ever. "What is it?" I asked. "The lion's moving faster than we thought," Gert said. "It's time to go." Glamora pointed to the pool, where the shadowy image of an enormous lion breaking through the door of a small thatched house appeared. It was too dark to really make him out, but he didn't look so cowardly to me. He looked mean and hungry. Behind him, I could see other silhouettes, the bumpy outlines of some kind of reptile, and a furry blur that looked like it might be some kind of enormous rodent. The lion spent so long afraid of every creature in the forest. Now he commands them, Nox whispered. What are those things? You name it. If it has claws and teeth and it drools, it probably answers to the lion. I felt myself shiver as my imagination filled in the blanks. What are they doing? I asked quietly, fighting back the irrational fear that he could hear me. What they do best, Glamora replied, going door to door. Some of the villagers he'll capture to bring back to Dorothy. The rest of them he'll kill. For fun. After he eats, of course. She trailed her fingers through the water, and the image disappeared in a swirl of red. It's too late for this village. It's already lost. But he'll be on to the next one soon, and if we act fast, we can stop him before he gets there.
Not to mention get to us, Nox said.
Exactly, Mombi interjected. He's less than 100 miles from us. If he gets any closer, we run the risk that his senses will be able to see past the magical barriers that keep us hidden here. She looked at me. I hope what I saw yesterday wasn't a fluke, Amy. This isn't a test anymore.
Mombi, Nox said, cutting in, please, think about it. Amy should stay behind. We can't risk her on something like this. It's too dangerous.
Mombi dismissed him with a wave of her gnarled hand.
We've already been through this, Nox. I wouldn't expect you, of all people, to let your feelings get in the way of what must be done. We need all the strength we can muster tonight.
If we can't count on Amy now, when all the rest of us will be there, she won't be much good alone against Dorothy anyway.
Melindra added, shooting a sidelong glance in my direction. I was annoyed. They were talking about me like I wasn't even there. And why was Nox trying to prevent me from going? Didn't he think I'd improved?
I'm going, I said coolly, all heads turning in my direction.
Melindra's right. And I'm a member of the Order now. I'm not just going to hide out here while everyone else fights. Nox's forehead creased in frustration, but he let it drop. It was settled. Mombi, Gert, and Glamora left the war room to make the final preparations. I was about to leave when Nox pulled me aside.
Here, he said, pushing something hard into my hand.
I turned the object over in my palm. It was a knife, but it wasn't only a knife. I could tell it was special just by the way it felt. It was heavy, heavier than it looked, and it was almost vibrating with something that I now recognized immediately as magic. I didn't want to like it, I didn't want to like anything that Nox gave me. But I couldn't help it. The knife was too beautiful. It was nothing like the kitchen knife that Pete had given me. It had a glinting silver blade with mysterious symbols engraved into it. The hilt was smooth and white, and was intricately carved into the figure of a bird with wings outstretched, ready to take flight. "I carved it by hand from a Kaleida's bones," he said, looking down to avoid meeting my eyes. "The blade's made from the claw. Gert spelled it, and Mombi sealed it. It's designed to channel your magic for you, to store it and make it easier to access. Not so different from Dorothy's magic shoes, really. Except, hopefully, you know, not totally evil." I rubbed my fingers over Nox's handiwork. It must have taken hours. I knew that he'd done it for the cause, so that I could be a better fighter. But it was still a gift, and it was still beautiful. "It will protect you," he said, "and there's another spell attached to it, too. Push the wings down." The wings didn't look like they would move, but when I pressed gingerly on them, they ceded easily to my touch and folded up neatly against the side of the bird's body. As they did, the knife sparkled in my hand and then evaporated into smoke that drifted off into the air. "Where did it go?" I asked. "It's still with you," Nox said, "just not anywhere someone else can find it. Now, picture it in your hand again." I looked down at my empty, open palm and imagined I was clutching the weapon. Its image entered my mind, and as it did, I was holding it again. "Thank you," I said quietly. I wrapped my fingers gently around the hilt. I couldn't remember the last time anyone had given me anything, and this was something that Nox had made just for me. Something magic. I felt my spirit lift inside myself. The corners of my mouth threatened to turn upward, but I didn't want him to see how happy the present had made me. "What kind of bird is this?" I asked. It didn't look like any bird I'd seen before. "It's a megrill, a bird that's native to Gilligan country. It spends half its life as a beetle, and when it's an adult, it goes to sleep for a year and wakes up as this majestic creature."
"Kind of like a butterfly."
"Kind of like you," he said. I didn't have an answer to that. I didn't need one. At that moment, Mombi appeared before us. She looked down at the knife and up at me, and then Nox. "It's time to go," she said. We all gathered a few minutes later in the training room, me, Nox, Gert, and Mombi, and held hands. Glamora would be staying behind, along with Melindra and Annabelle. Melindra complained about being left behind. She wasn't the type to want to miss out on any action. But she seemed placated when Mombi reminded her that it was important that our most skilled fighter guard the headquarters in case it was a trap. Melindra didn't look happy about it, but she knew better than to argue with Mombi. I felt myself envying her. Now that it was time to go, I suddenly wondered if I should have been so eager to fight. But it was too late to think about that. In the training area, we all stood in a circle, all of us chanting at once as we worked together to cast the spell that would take us to the village. Glamora took a step back, still chanting, and stepped out of the circle, followed by Annabelle and Melindra. We all joined hands. Nox looked over at me. "Hold on," he warned me with a sly, nervous grin. He squeezed tight. I felt an invisible force start to lift me. Then it yanked me upward like a bullet, and we shot straight up. I screamed and closed my eyes, knowing I was about to be smushed like a bug against the roof of the cave. Instead, I felt wind on my face,
I opened my eyes and found that my body was horizontal, my arms strained to their limits as I held on to Knox. Everyone else still had their eyes closed, their mouths forming the same chant over and over and over, and we were all fanned out like skydivers in formation, the mountain below us, hurtling out of sight. We were flying. It was the most incredible feeling I'd ever had. The sensation of free-falling made me giddy and lightheaded, like I was a balloon and my insides were helium. I laughed, almost forgetting that I, Salvation Amy, was on my way to battle the not-so-cowardly lion and his army of monsters. How could my stomach tie itself into knots about what was coming when I was busy tumbling into the sky? It never gets old, Nock said, opening his eyes, in case you were wondering. His normally spiky hair was flattened against his head by the wind, but for some reason his voice came out normal, like we were still standing right next to each other in the training room. You could have warned me, I said. I thought we were going to teleport. It takes too much energy to teleport this many people, he said. By the time we got there, we'd all be ready to pass out from exhaustion. This is more efficient. Plus, it's fun. Won't they see us coming? Nope, Nock said. We're traveling in the space between space. They can't see us if we're not really here. It's how we passed through the mountain. Oh, I said, pretending I knew what he was talking about. I'll explain later, he said. Should we still be chanting? I asked nervously, seeing that both Mombi and Gert still had their eyes squeezed tight. Nah, he said. The takeoff is the hard part. Now that we're on our way, it only takes Gert to keep us in the air. What's Mombi doing then? I asked. Knox wiggled his eyebrows and lowered his voice to a conspiratorial stage whisper. Mombi's afraid of heights, he said. She's not casting a spell. She's saying her prayers. Who exactly do wicked witches pray to? Knox laughed. Who knows? She's just trying to stay distracted so she doesn't piss herself before we land. Our ascent had slowed down by now, and we floated easily through the air, a mist of lavender clouds hovering just inches above our heads. In the distance, the sun was rising over the deadly desert. Instead of looking down, I looked at Knox as he took in the landscape. Seeing him like this, away from the caves, away from the cause, I could almost see the boy he could have been, the boy he would have been if Dorothy had never come back. He looked happy. He looked beautiful. Then he turned dark again. Almost here, he said. I followed his gaze and saw thick black smoke rising up from a forested area at the foot of a mountain range, curling into the sky. Get ready, Gert said, not opening her eyes. We are coming in for a landing. The knot in my stomach tied itself right back up as our velocity reversed itself and we hurtled for the ground, picking up speed. But her warning was unnecessary. We landed like feathers in a field on the outskirts of what must have been Pumperdink. It was on fire. Its small, dome-shaped houses consumed with flames as panicked townspeople raced in every direction. The smell filled my nostrils and stayed there, churning. It was disgusting, a horrible combination of smoke and blood and burning flesh and other things, I'm sure, that I didn't even want to know about. As I looked around, unsure what to do next, I saw something moving above me. Monkeys. They were weaving through the burning sky. The almost human-like way in which they swooped and dove into the chaos made me shiver. Mombi and I will take down the beasts.